WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. President Trump wants a U.S. takeover of the Gaza Strip. He proposes a U.S.-led redevelopment of the Strip nestled on the eastern shore of the Mediterranean.
Everybody I've spoken to loves the idea of the United States owning that piece of land, developing and creating thousands of jobs with something that will be magnificent in a really magnificent area that nobody would know. Nobody can look because all they see is death and destruction and rubble.
The president speaking after a sit-down with Israel's leader. There's also the issue of the 2 million people who call the Gaza Strip home. The Senate voted 77-23 to confirm Doug Collins' nomination as Veterans Affairs Secretary. On a 54-46 vote, the Senate confirmed Pam Bondi as Attorney General. Egg prices skyrocketing in the wake of the bird flu outbreak that spurred egg farms to cull tens of millions of hens. The Waffle House chain of restaurants is now slapping a 50-cent per egg surcharge to offset its costs.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
The Bucks get zapped by the Thunder. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks lost on the road to the Oklahoma City Thunder, 125-96. Milwaukee missing four of their top players, Giannis, Damian Lillard, Brooke Lopez, Chris Middleton. It was the Bucks' fourth straight loss. Pat Connington.
They're a tremendous team, and that's not a secret. For us, when you're in a game, when you're in a situation like where you're shorthanded and kind of, you know, like we were tonight, you got to think about the things that you can control.
College hoops, the Badgers host the Hoosiers from Indiana tonight in Madison. Greg Gard talked about their win over Northwestern over the weekend.
I didn't think we came really ready to compete right out of the gate on Saturday. So we got that fire lit a little bit. But I thought the group of Janicki, McGee, Amos was out there at time. Obviously, Gilmore did some good things in the first half. We got some energy going and got our juices going a little bit with that group off the bench. And that sometimes we need that.
That's Wisconsin's head coach Greg Gard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Are you looking to kick up your nighttime entertainment? Good times await you at the Lazy Oaf Lounge, Madison's east side place for friends and family to meet for fun and food. Test your knowledge with Monday trivia. Let your inner rock star out with Thursday karaoke, plus live music, and meet all your friends at the Lazy Oaf for the big game. The Lazy Oaf Lounge, 1617 North Stoughton Road in Madison. Follow them on Facebook or at LazyOafLounge.com.
A new choice. Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Came across an exit interview. The Washington Post did an exit interview with former DNC chair Jamie Harrison. And I remember when Jamie Harrison was the new hot commodity, raised a bunch of money running against Lindsey Graham, was going to be the golden boy, was the wonder child of the Democratic Party, had the new vision, the way forward. And I got to tell you, during his tenure, the party struggled. And I think it struggled to find an identity. And I thought it was interesting that in the exit interview, this is his quote. He said, "One of the things that I really recommend that we get back to is strong on the ground in the community actions where people aren't just hearing us talk about what our values are, but what they can see in real time." He said when he talked about when he was in South Carolina, one of the programs that they created, Democrats Care, where they did a whole bunch of things to help people out. And it went into this whole thing about talking to the working class and talking about working class issues, and went into, you know, maybe we should be talking to workers. And this is where my mind went into this crazy mode, because we reached out to Jamie Harrison almost immediately of him coming on as chair of the DNC. and we invited him to come on the program. I wanted him to come on often. I wanted him to come on once, because we would have told him that you got to stick to the meat and potatoes. Got to stick to that bread and butter stuff that you put on the table. That when you come home at 5 o'clock, you have some dinner. You talk to the kids. You got the roof over the head. You're working your butt off. You shower before you go to sleep. That kind of stuff. But he didn't come on, and they sent us no one. So what we would have shared with them is what I guess he's now found out 4 years later, never happened. But he did have a podcast, though. We were told that. We were told, no, he's probably never doing your show, but he has a podcast. And I'm hoping the new guy, one, comes on the show, because I think we have a lot to talk about. But two, hones in on that economic message. Because working class voters don't care about the culture war. They care about economic stability. They care about job stability. They care about wages. They care about benefits. They care about opportunity. We shouldn't be worrying as much about, things happening that's out of our control. We should be worrying about healthcare for folks, getting access, affordability, ensuring that when people get sick, that they get taken care of. We should be worried about education. We should be worried about workforce development, job training. We should be giving kids opportunities. We should be making lives better, investing heavily in apprenticeship programs that get kids union jobs, affordable housing, something that Kamala Harris, in her defense, did try to talk about. Now, I thought it was a dumb idea, and I'll be the first to tell you that. Giving $25,000 to a first-time home buyer does the one thing that Republicans love to do, and that is divide people. If you were going to give out 25 grand, why didn't you just take the money, build low-cost housing, and give them away? That would have been a better solution than this here, which I didn't even understand. We do need to invest in low-cost housing. We do need to build stuff. Like kind of we did when my grandparents' generation was coming up. They built lots of little Levitt towns all around this country with federal money using private contractors who said, yeah, we'll build these homes for a percentage of profit. That's what people need. We need smart policy in that way. You talk to people, they want to know they're going to be okay. They want to know their Social Security is going to be there. They want to know that in rough times, someone's going to be to help there with unemployment or food assistance, those things. Now, in Kamala Harris's defense and in the Democrats' defense, they did lean in a bit into labor rights and union support. And I'll be right up front with that. Joe Biden, the most pro-union president of my lifetime. But the stuff that working class people care about, affordable child care, infrastructure and public services to help them get to and from work. These are things that this should be the core message. The core message is we're going to make your lives better. And this is where Jamie Harrison is right. And I wish, as chair of the DNC for the last 4 years, he would have hammered on this. That idea of Democrats care should be the message. We care that you're going to be able to get a good job that's going to provide you a wage that you live on. We care that you're going to get health insurance so that when crisis hits, you will be cared for. We care if you have retirement security so as you get older, you don't have to worry about having to live with your kids or in the gutter. Democrats care about your kids because we want the best education and not all these schemes that maybe you get a golden ticket or trip over some virtual thing. But good, solid public education, community schools. We should be hammering on this because the other side is a horrible message. Trump's message is terrible. Trump's message is everyone else is wrong and I'm right and despise everybody. There's no plan. How Democrats lost working class people, quite frankly, they didn't talk to them. They stopped. Assumed they were going to be there. Took on other interests. Now it's time to get back to your roots. Time to roll up those sleeves and do some work. And that work comes back to what kind of a vision for the future do we have? Trump and company, they are going to show you again who they are. These are people who don't care about you or me or your neighbors. These are people who care about power. And look at what Elon Musk is doing. Look at the fact that we're about to enter into a trade war that nobody wanted. Look, I'm a protectionist at heart. This idea that we're going to slap 25% tariffs on two countries we have a trade agreement with is, well, I'm hoping there's a plan. I am. I'm hoping, but I fear not. While not putting a big enough tariff on China, look, I'm all in favor of taking on China. This may be the last opportunity we get to not lose the rest of our industries. Because understand, if BYD or one of the Chinese car companies gets access to this market, it's over. And it's not just the car companies that are going to go down. It's going to be all of the other jobs that feed into that. That is going to be a massive, massive disruptive opportunity for China to take over. And it's going to mean pain and suffering for working people in this country. So Democrats have there's a crack here. There's an opening to say Democrats care. They care about jobs. They care about infrastructure. They care about your children. They care about your communities. And it's time to point out exactly what Trump and the Republicans have in store for us. Now, do I hope these tariffs work? You know, I hope so, because I believe it's a tool we desperately need. But I don't know. And when you give someone like Elon Musk the kind of outweighed power that he's grabbing onto, I think we got problems ahead. And Democrats need to have a strong vision to bring people around. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, interesting report that evidently the NTSB isn't going to be sending out emails, I guess, anymore. If you want to know what the NTSB is doing, you just have to go to X, what is formerly known as Twitter. Or as I put on social media, this is what fascism looks like. We will no longer be using press releases. Everything will be in a tweet or an X or whatever they're calling them now. Because, of course, Elon Musk wants it that way. And here to share some thoughts on how much power does Elon Musk have? Does he have the ability to cut, you know, funding for programs? Can he not pay contractors? Can he cut grants? Can he slash and burn our government? Interesting what $200 million will get you. But here to share some thoughts, I've asked my good friend Bob Ney to come share some thoughts. A longtime congressman from Ohio and probably one of the smartest political guys I know on the circuit. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you, Rick.
So, Doge Boy, they created a department for him, the Department of Government Efficiency, and they've given him a mandate, I guess, or something to go in and slash and burn. And I actually don't know. So can you walk me through what Doge is and what it's supposed to be doing?
Well, first of all, Doge doesn't have to worry about funding because Elon Musk, if he wants to, can fund whatever staffing levels he wants. Let's face it. So, you know, he has the most money in the world. So when people talk about, well, will Doge get funding? It doesn't matter. Musk makes what? 1.6 million an hour?
Something like
so
that.
it just doesn't matter about having to have congressional approval or even the White House attempting to give staff. Although technically presidents can create these entities and then they can lend staff if they want to from other cabinet positions that are out there, from Health and Human Services or Homeland Security or OBM, Office of Budget Management, whatever they want to do. So I just kind of wanted to set that aside. That's not an issue here, where in normal cases you have to go to Congress. I need help. I need this established. I need that department established. Second, Rick, this is not an official created agency. So therefore, it technically can't promulgate a rule, which is what agencies can do. They can promulgate a rule that says, this is how we're going to function. This is, you know, how Human Services will allocate money. This is how HUD will carry out its housing projects. This agency won't be able to promulgate a rule. This is a created, fabricated agency by the White House. Now, having said that, maybe Musk will attempt to do, you know, certain movements throughout the government, but legally, I guarantee you that will be challenged instantly. Here's where it's all going to explode or mesh together or a combination of both. As Musk gains the support, of course, of the White House and goes into Congress and says, we want to do this, we want to cut that, we want to stop this, we want to make a rescission, whatever he does is eventually going to butt up against the Congress. I'll talk about the Republican side. The Democrat side is not going to like what he does, but the Republican side may also fall into that category in certain places. They may not like what
Elon Musk. Sure, brother-in-law might lose a job.
Well, sure. Yeah. And now, the Congress itself, on a bipartisan basis, has failed forever now to create budgets. They don't do budgets. They do continuing resolutions. A continuing resolution is not a budget. So, therefore, as they do the budget process and Musk comes in with all these ideas, if they go back to the budget process, I should say, instead of if they do it, the Republicans promised under McCarthy to do that, and they have failed to produce, you know, all the budget documents they should have, agency by agency. But let's say that they do. Musk will come in with these recommendations. And of course, he has a lot of political juice behind him if he has Trump in his corner. That's where this is going to collide. The Republicans will start to have Musk into their territory. You know, the budget committees, by the way, and this is a nice inside thing that happens, which a lot of people don't know about, but the subcommittee chairs of the Appropriations Committee, Appropriations spends the money, allocates the money, whichever way you want to put that. So they're the key budget principles if we go back to that. They're actually called cardinals. We call them, oh, he's a cardinal, she's a cardinal. We actually call them cardinals. Think about that. You know, as in the Pope, right? You know, so the speaker's the Pope and these are the cardinals.
Sure.
Well, it's just amazing. So there's a lot of turf battle there and a lot of ego-centric situations where it's like, it's my subcommittee. You're not going to tell me what to do. So this is where I think Musk hits up against the wall. Now, the question is this. Will Trump, if the Congress pushes back very, very hard, Republican side, will Trump align with Musk and create damage for himself amongst the Republicans? Or will Trump say, I've got to survive here and I'm going to put Musk in the background? If Musk goes in the background, does he go quietly? Or does this become a food fight with he and Trump? That's the big question.
No, and it's been my question from the very beginning, not just because of this most recent power grab that we're seeing, because Look, Musk spent $200 million to get Trump elected. He now has access to a $6 trillion checkbook, and he's claiming The reports that are coming out is that he's vowed to unilaterally cancel grant payments because, you know, he says that, well, these different places have been instructed by Treasury to just pay things, approve payment, even if they're fraudulent or to terrorist groups. He's also said that they're going to stop paying contractors. So, you know, he's already taking a position of, I don't need to go to Congress. I'm slashing and burning right now.
Well, of course, President Trump found out, you know, a week or so back that you just can't unilaterally freeze. You can temporarily do it as a president, but it was already going into a court battle, and Trump reversed the entire freeze on the government because there is an impounding act, which was created in 1974 due to Richard Nixon saying, I don't like what Congress did. I don't like what they passed. I might have signed the bill, but guess what? I'm going to stop it now. That movement by Nixon created the 1974 act that led to what's called impounding, where if a president wants the Congress to take something back, quote, to rescind it from what the Congress approved, say the year before, the president has to ask for that to happen and the Congress has to approve it. Now, Trump falling in line with, you know, what I'm sure Elon Musk gave as advice, just freeze it and rescind this and get rid of that. Now, the Trump administration has found out that there's an act called 1974 Impoundment Act, and you just can't do that. So if Musk tries to do it unilaterally on his own, he might get cabinet members to go along with him, but it's going to be a court battle. It will be a huge court battle. Now, the question on the court battle is, though, how much damage is done before the court makes a decision? Do they make a temporary stay, or would it continue with Musk trying to rescind items on his own while the court decides? That's to be seen. Depends, you know, which court it's taken to, because believe me, a lot of attorney generals of the United States in the various states will take a lawsuit, especially in the blue states.
No, and this is where, you know, you look at this and you go, how did Musk grab so much control and so much power so quickly? Now, look, Trump is a guy who likes to be at the front of the stage. I've said from the beginning, I don't know how the two of them are going to coexist. I don't know how they're going to work it out. And look, there was an article over at Politico magazine that said, you know, memo to Elon, know your boss, to where, you know, they're predicting that this is going to butt up against, as you were saying, that relationship and who gets thrown under the bus. And I'm saying this might be a good thing because Trump might go, hey, we should be taxing someone like Musk because he's got too much power and too much money.
Well, yes. And if you look at it, this is what can make this change, the dynamic. Let's say that Musk goes into Health and Human Services and he starts to say he can rescind this and rescind that. And you've got, you know, RFK Jr. bending the ear of the president, or you've got other cabinet members, EPA, whichever agencies, bending the ear of the president saying, look, what he is doing, he's interfering with how your cabinet members running the government. And we're trying to carry, follow me on this, Rick, Mr. President, we're trying to carry out your objectives. And this is really interfering with what you really want. So if enough cabinet members can put that thought into Trump's head that what Musk is doing is actually going contrary to what Trump wants through his cabinet members, you can see how that could affect Trump's thinking.
Yeah, no, it's amazing to me. But, you know, again, I keep coming back to this of how Trump or Musk has gotten this kind of access that, you know, you just have, you know, Trump's acting, you know, Deputy Secretary of the Treasury, you have this guy resigning who's been a career Treasury employee saying, no, I'm not going to give you all of this sensitive information. And Musk ends up with it. This is, I guess where I'm going is you're talking about Social Security information. You're talking about Medicare information. You're talking about basically how our government spends every dime in the hands of someone like Elon Musk, who has said, look, you know, Tesla's not a car company. It's a technology company. It's a data company. They just happen to make cars. The fact that this guy's so invested in AI and all of this stuff, I don't think anybody voted for this. So I'm not comfortable at a level that I don't think I've ever been at before, and I'm not sure if I'm making that clear enough.
Well, I mean, I follow you, and
I hope someone does because I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that we've given this one guy such access that nobody elected.
Right. Well, if I remember right, at some point in time during the campaign, Musk had made a statement that he really wasn't going to put a lot of money into the campaigns. I think he made that statement, including the presidential. And then it all reversed because I think, Musk looked at the writing on the wall and felt that, Trump was going to win. And then he became more than a contributor. He became, the right hand guy. He was on stage, dancing around in the final weeks of the campaign. So it was made very, very clear that he was an integral part, not just with the money. It's one thing, people contribute massive amounts of money, and that's one thing. And they like to, go to parties or be able to pick up the phone and have influence. But it's another when they move then into becoming a semi-official, which is what DOGE is. It's semi-official because it's not an approved act of Congress, but it gave Musk a lot of power to be able to acquire information.
And the other part that I have with this, and the scary part for me, is that there's no one overseeing him. There doesn't seem to be any guardrails. There doesn't seem to be anything in place and how he can use this data or information. There doesn't seem to be anything. There's no leash here.
Well, the only way it's going to retract itself to any extent is if, in fact, Musk steps on enough toes, even though he has the most money in the world, he steps on enough political toes in the cabinet, in the Congress, that the chief of staff, Susie Wiles, then says, okay, wait a minute, we've got to do something about this. And then the question is, what do you do about it? I mean, does Trump just cut the relationship? I don't think so. So it's a hairy thing for the White House if this goes in the wrong direction.
What has gotten my attention is, and I guess the Nazi salute that wasn't the Nazi salute or whatever that was, the overtures to right-wing groups around the world by Musk, it just seems like this is what fascism looks like.
Well, he no doubt has a lot of power due to the amount of money. I mean, when they were talking about potentially making him the Speaker of the House, imagine if you're a Republican and you oppose McCarthy or Johnson as Speaker. You oppose them, and maybe there's repercussions. If you would oppose somebody like Musk, you could have a $27 million primary against yourself,
yeah,
or $15 million or $30 million, who knows? So Musk within himself brings controversy, but he also brings this certain amount of power. The only way that's going to be curtailed eventually, for example, in other countries where he attempts to interfere, is if people don't listen to what he's saying, and despite the amount of money, they go a different direction.
But isn't this a moment, and this is where I keep coming back to, and this is the moment where someone like Musk, having the kind of outweighed power and influence that he has, where we say as a country, maybe we shouldn't have someone with this kind of power and this kind of wealth, that maybe we should have a tax system that says maybe not $500 billion?
Well, it's, back to the 1%. And
yeah, but he's the 1% of the 1% of the 1% of the 1%.
He's 1% on steroids. But Bezos, for example, didn't pay taxes till what, I could be wrong, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, basically. And you sit there And, you know what you pay. I know what I pay. I know what your listeners can say that, you know, they pay. And for a lot of average people sitting there paying, say 10%, say 5%, maybe 15, 20, who knows? And then you have the super uber wealthy who basically skate. And how does any of that ever appear to be fair? And it makes them more powerful. You know, if they had a little bit of their wings clipped, probably, it might be a different story.
No, I'm right there. But we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm watching this play out, and I said, you know, at the beginning of the year that this was going to be, for me, the entertainment, how long this bromance lasts. We'll see. But as always, Bob, I appreciate the time and the thoughts. Great stuff.
Thank you, Rick.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Do you think the bromance breaks up? Do you think Musk goes too far? Or is he too powerful? Is there too much? rick@thericksmithshow.com. Back after this.
Welcome to Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A cloudy sky for tonight, lows to the mid-teens. Snow developing for Wednesday. Even some freezing rain mixed at times. Accumulations less than an inch by Wednesday night. High near 30. Currently, we're at 15.
The John and Gordy Show.
We're talking with Dr. Tim Slecker. You know, we've been on AI for a long time.
What can you now do with data? You know, ask AI, say, based on what we know about Gordy, and based on what we know about the job market, what should Gordy do for the rest of his life?
Send him to broadcast school. He's worthless.
Weekday mornings, 6 till 8 on 92.7 WMDX and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I know a lot has been said about the helicopter plane crash in D.C. I know a lot and from every angle, they've already talked about this. But for me, one of the things that caught my attention, and look, there's a lot of craziness around this, but one of the things was the press secretary, Carolyn Leavitt, her frame, do you want a skilled pilot or a pilot with the right color skin? I find bizarrely hysterical in that, you know, I guess, why can't you have both? I mean, once in a while, maybe, you know, they're qualified to fly the plane. Does it matter? But to take a tragedy like nobody else has ever done before and to trump it up, it just the next 1445 days, gonna be a long 1445 days. And here to share some thoughts on that frame, I've asked my good friend Sarah Burris to come share some thoughts. Sarah's a reporter at rawstory.com, the website, if you want to take a look at the work that she does. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how the heck are you?
So what do you make of that? I mean, that frame. I mean, of course I want somebody qualified to fly the plane, you moron. But
what is the right color skin?
Yeah.
That's my question.
There you go.
Right?
There you go.
I mean, and why is it that the thing that I keep seeing on TV is that 94% of pilots are white men. So it's like, what flight did you take somewhere in your history where you had something terrible go wrong and the pilot was a black woman? Like, tell me, name that flight for me, because I'm pretty sure that those flights are few and far between.
Well, but
the fact that now
immediately when the Trump came out and they came out with, I was watching Hegseth speak and I'm like, that's a bizarre turn. We went from the crash to DEI. That's a weird turn. So immediately I'm like, there must be something they know. And within a half an hour, I started getting emails and a trans woman crashed the plane. I'm going, the plane or the helicopter? Which is it? Because I thought it was a woman flying the helicopter. It was just crazy the kind of immediate response that I got from people just because Trump and company said, well, DEI did it.
See, and I had heard that the people flying the planes were the dude who had the 500 hours of training, who was renewing a certification, and his instructor who had 1,000 hours of flight time, and that she was just there. You know, I don't know what her role was, but I also don't know if she's a half black, half Latina, trans lesbian. So.
And we didn't at the time, but the fact that they came out with that made everyone go in that direction. And this is this is what dysfunctional government looks like. This is what propaganda government will get you. Immediately, we go into our silos, into our camps, and we start throwing bombs at each other without actually looking for real information. And that is, you know, that's Trump one, the rest of us zero.
It is. And it's our friend Richard Jetta shared a really good video that I also shared of a former military officer who was talking about shock and awe, and that basically what Trump is doing to us with all of these executive orders and all of these crazy speeches and comments and, you know, it is very much about trying to shock the hell out of all of us into complacency. And I think to some extent that has worked with the left, where you're not seeing a ton of reaction and protest. I will say there is now going to be a protest every Friday outside of the ICE headquarters in Dallas, Texas. And I think that is so brave of them. Sure. Like, they're just taking it to them, right? Like, I really admire people that are willing to do any kind of protesting in Texas because they have a lot of guns. Right. So I think the complacency that you're seeing from folks who are willing to fight back against Trump is kind of destabilizing, like more so. Well, not more so than Trump himself, but that sort of frightens me about the stability of the democracy more than anything, because obviously there should be, you know, two or more parties who are willing to fight with each other. And that's not even happening right now.
Well, what do you say to the person like me who goes, you know what, let them hang themselves. Let them, give them enough rope. Look, because they're going to overreach. And I've said that we've had this conversation a couple of times already. They won the election. Elections have consequences. All of this stuff that he's doing, putting Elon Musk in charge of the country's checkbook. He didn't run on that. But let them go as far as their inclinations, their wants, their greed. Let them go as far as they want to go, until eventually people wake up to the reality that this was all about making Trump and his cronies wealthier and consolidating more power and harming average everyday working people to the point where then you have something to mobilize around. Right now, we're still divided on DEI. Was it a black trans woman, non-gender, non-binary person who was on the plane, not even flying it? I mean, this is the argument level that we're at this point. Or do you think I'm wrong?
I think, I mean, especially with issues like that, I don't even want to debate it, because it's just like, oh, you're just making stuff up. Like, that's fake news again, right? That's your alternative facts again.
Yeah.
And again, like, I keep waiting for that moment where I come out of, you know, the let them burn it down mood and get back to my optimism. And I'm still not there yet. Like, I keep waiting for it to happen. My optimism and my, you know, Pollyanna, desire of the world to come back to me. And it just hasn't yet. But
see, now I think these tariffs that he's put on, I think this is an opportunity to get a wide swath of people together instead of just little silo thinking. This is an opportunity to unite the country around the idea that the use of a tool improperly, and I am a tariff person, I believe used in the right way with a larger strategic plan, I am a tariff person. But I think this is an opportunity, if he doesn't have that bigger strategic plan, to really unite around the fact that he's going to make our lives worse.
He is. And you're already starting to see it. I'm sure folks went to the grocery stores over the weekend and saw some grocery prices that were going up, maybe not necessarily because the tariffs had gone into effect yet, but because I think folks are going to start trying to figure out extra ways to gouge and overprofit for a lot of things.
Well, did you see the thing? Costco has like a 4 dozen egg maximum to where it would, I thought we were getting 99 cent eggs. Where the hell are my 99 cent eggs?
I know. I went shopping on Saturday and saw 99 cent avocados and was like, ooh, I will have all of you. Right. But, you know, again, like, maybe that is the kind of hurt that people need to experience, is their grocery prices being too high, every electronic that they own, I was talking to my mother, my parents are home builders, they're talking about the components that go into refrigerators. So it's like a KitchenAid may be made in Arkansas or whatever, but all of the parts are coming from China, right. You know, all of these things. And so every single thing that exists is going to go up in price. And now we're also seeing Canada respond to it with some really creative retaliation, where some of them are targeting red states. Some of them are just saying, screw it, I'm banning all American liquor. We're banning, you know, everything coming in from the United States. Gavin Newsom, bless him, came up with this hilarious idea of, because Trump wants to kill the electric vehicle tax credit, which was $7,500. He wants to kill that. And so Gavin Newsom is like, okay, well, anybody who wants to buy an electric vehicle in California, I will give you that tax credit. And it will not apply to Teslas because, hey, Elon left and went to Texas. Yeah. So see ya.
No. But, you know, it's interesting, though, because if you watched Trump's speech, there's a moment where he's talking about a conversation with Trudeau, where he says, you know, when I told him, what's going to happen if we do this and put tariffs on you. And he said that his country would disband. And I'm going, there is no way in a cold day in Hades that Trudeau said to you, if you put tariffs on us, our country will disband. There is no way that statement ever come out of his mouth. And then look, and that's one of those things. It doesn't even pass the common sense test, let alone the smell test. And yet I haven't heard anyone really call him on that.
True. And I wonder too, like, if I was a world leader, I would make sure that I'm sure all of these people are recording these conversations for their own purposes, either note taking or otherwise.
Or they will be.
But if they're not, they absolutely should be, and they should be releasing those tapes, because at this point, like, there's nothing that would hurt them for doing that. And I do think that the most important thing in the world is transparency in government, whether right or left. Like, everybody should be very transparent about what's going on. So, like,
in the world of transparency. Evidently, last Friday, the federal government shut down most of its websites because, hey, why should anyone know what's going on? And I understand the NTSB is only going to be putting out their press releases on X.
Of course, that just makes so much sense, right? So I think that that's absurd. But here, this is the world we live in now.
This is what fascism looks like.
Yeah, and... So part of the removing the websites shutting down, some of them did shut down, some didn't, or at least I didn't see. Like, I kept refreshing and looking at different places. I know the Census Bureau shut down. I kept watching for the VA, and I didn't see that one shut down. But the goal for them was basically removing any kind of information that has anything to do with climate change, anything to do with gender, anything to do with diversity.
Yeah, we're purging.
There was a wall. There was a wall mural in the FBI as you came in the doors at Quantico that talked about, you know, intelligence, creativity, like all of these. It was like a word cloud of all of the characteristics that they look for in an agent. And then, of course, diversity is on one of those things. And so Trump has ordered that they paint over the wall.
We're going to tear down the wall.
Yeah.
And speaking of purging, evidently the Back the Blue folks are taking the next step from defunding the police to we're just firing the FBI, huh?
Yeah, that's the thing that blows my mind, is on Friday there was a whole story about the FBI purge, and And the goal, I think, was for them to try and get rid of all of the people that had anything to do with January 6th cases. The problem is that because there were so many of the January 6th cases, apparently close to 3/4 of the entire FBI have had their hands on the January 6th cases. So if we're going to basically unmake the FBI, so how is that not defunding the police or firing the police? Right? Like, they're not even defunding. They're just firing everybody. And this is what you try and tell me your support of law enforcement is? Like, how does that work?
At will. Do what we like or do what we say or, well, to the curb with you. Also, I understand we have changed the Eagle seal, or we were going to change the Eagle seal. Walk me through this. Walk me through Sealgate.
Okay, so I had not heard about this until this weekend, and it was a really obscure kind of thing that I read, and I was like, wait, how has nobody talked about this? And it is one of the executive orders that Trump pulled back, that he repealed, is the executive order that changes the direction that the seal, the eagle on the seal of America faces. When we were, you know, the eagle has in its talons arrows and an olive branch. Right. And when we are at peacetime as a country, the eagle faces the olive branch. When we are at war, it faces the arrows. We are not at war. And so the fact that he wanted to change it to facing the arrows makes me just immediately go, wait a second, are we going to war with somebody?
Trade war.
You know, I don't know, because that's not an arrow, right? But is this whole, like, we're going into Panama and going into Greenland, like, is that really going to happen now? Is he going to go to war? Is he really going to start dropping bombs on cartels?
The question I would have is, would the Red Hats care?
Because depends on if they reinstate the draft, right?
There you go. Because one of the talking points I get from my Red Hats is, well, you know, we were at peace for his 4 years, except for, you know, Afghanistan.
For still being in Afghanistan, yeah, right, and fighting ISIS and
you know, Iran, whatever. And all that. Except for that. But except for that. Everything was peaceful and fun. Finally, I wanted to extend my condolences and my sympathy for a loss of a friend of yours, former Oklahoma Representative Ryan Kissel, I guess, passed away. And I wanted to, I know you guys were friends, and I wanted to give you a second to remember him.
Yeah. For folks who don't know about him, he was one of the youngest legislators elected to the Oklahoma House of Representatives. He was elected from his hometown of Seminole, Oklahoma, and we ended up becoming friends because I used to do candidate fundraising, and so I think all of the relationships that I have with people in politics in Oklahoma are because of him. Like, I have 3 girlfriends that are all named Sarah, and all of us met as a conduit through Kissel. And then, you know, after he finished in the legislature, he ended up going to work for, as the executive director of the Oklahoma ACLU. So all of those fights that happened over the 10 commandments at the state capitol and, you know, stuff like that, he was, you know, the one who was bringing together an amazing crack legal team of people who were fighting a lot of the right wing, you know, anti-constitutional policies in Oklahoma. And so, I mean, it is, for me, it's a huge personal loss that hurts. He left his wife, his daughter is 9, his son is 13, but it's a big loss to the movement of people who are still fighting for the Constitution. And that is the hardest part at a time like this. In our world, there's nothing we need more than more people willing to stand up for democracy and stand up for the Constitution. And we just lost a big one.
Yeah, and it's these times where, you know, a young man with a young family with a whole life ahead of him. And it's these moments where you sit back and you begin to reconsider,
you know, your own mortality and your own direction. I know since the tragedy with my wife, you know, we've begun to reconsider what, you know, what life looks like, you know, for me and for our family. So I understand the horrible nature of these tragedies, and you know, my heart goes out to you, his family, and his children as well, because I again can't imagine.
I think one of the positives of, so he had cancer, and he had had cancer several years ago, like even before the pandemic. And when that happened for the first time, he really changed a lot of where he was very ambitious, I want to say. And then after that, he was still involved, but he became much more focused on family and friends and spending time with everybody and like making sure we were all together. And, you know, when I was in town, being able to hang out and, you know, go kayaking and stuff like that. So I think that and these kinds of tragedies and illnesses like that really refocuses those of us who think, you know, oh, I need to be making more money, or I need to be a higher level in my company or whatever. Like, it's, yeah, those are great things, but the reality is so much of it is just about being with the people that you love.
Yeah. And rethinking what we fight over and what divides us, you know, because ultimately, you know, our day will all come, but you know, maybe how we treat each other. Just a thought. But again, I wanted to extend my condolences to you and obviously to his family and the folks of Oklahoma. Appreciate it, Sarah.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
We love you, Sarah. We wish you the best. Our good friend Sarah Burris, make sure you check out her work over at Raw Story, rawstory.com. I want to hear your thoughts. Have you had these kind of moments in your life that made you go, hey, maybe I'm going to rethink something through? And maybe these kind of situations maybe help us think about moving forward, how we deal with each other. I don't know. Just throwing it out. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1825. That was the day the Ohio legislature authorized the Canal Act. The act called for the construction of two canals. The first would connect Lake Erie to the Ohio River, stretching from Cleveland in the north to Portsmouth in the south. The second would connect Cincinnati to Toledo. A workforce of up to 5,000 men worked on the canal at the peak of construction. Many of the workers were German and Irish immigrants. Some had canal building experience from their work on the Erie Canal in New York, which had just been completed. These workers faced malaria and back-breaking labor. A saying of the day went, "For every mile of the canal, an Irishman is buried." But the true toll was even greater. It's estimated that as many as 6 workers died for every mile of canal crossed. The names of most of the men who built the canal are lost to history. At the start of the project, the men were paid just 30 cents a day and a ration of whiskey. The stretch between Cleveland and the Ohio River was completed in 7 years. The freight traffic on the canal spurred the growth of the small settlement on the shores of Lake Erie. Cleveland grew to become an industrial center and the 6th largest city in the United States by the early 20th century. The canal had also transformed the state of Ohio. The two main lines were connected to multiple smaller feeder canals and side cuts. Branches of the canals touched 44 of the 88 counties in Ohio. Local farmers and merchants were finally connected to the markets in the East through this elaborate network. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I gotta tell you, you know, to pick up on what Sarah and I were talking about, you know, when these things happen, it makes you reconsider. You know, we're dug into these trenches, and is it worth all of the all of the turmoil and the heated discord and all of that. And the reality is could walk away. But then I come back to, what about my kids? What about the future for my children and grandchildren? What kind of future are we going to leave them if you allow someone like Trump to continue to do what they've been doing? Understand, the chaos of these last couple of days is going to continue. And it's going to get worse the more that he thinks he's able to get away with this. And we got a court system that hasn't held him accountable. We've got a Congress that's feckless and ineffective, and a Republican Party that, quite frankly, is rudderless. It's whatever you want, dear Donald. And you come back to it, this is what fascism looked like. Now, what have the Democrats done? Not much. I've had a lot of people say, well, they should be fighting. And you go, well, one, this is what happens when you have an election. There are consequences. And there's part of me that goes, as I said with Sarah, let them have enough rope to where they hang themselves, so they get themselves into trouble. Look, I got a couple of emails from folks. Lee sent me an email, said, look, I love the show, like the show. How about this? Current political system's not working for the average person. The DNC and the RNC should be shut down. They do nothing for voters. Distracted in fighting. Candidates show only should only be able to use $200,000 for campaigns. No monies can come from special interest groups. Any changes or additions to our Constitution will be the result of a referendum vote. More ideas will be needed. And he says, thanks for the program. And look, I don't care about the DNC or the RNC. They're not important to me. The DNC has proved completely worthless. The hope is the new guy, Ked Martin, the new head over there, going to start talking about working people issues. Because I did think it was cute, as I've said before, that Jamie Harrison said, hey, you need to learn to start talking to working people. Thought it was cute. Now, Anthony says, what about the 2/3 party candidates whose combined votes would have put Harris over the top? Jill Stein, knowing that she was strictly a spoiler, would never win, put Trump in office twice. These voters of her should be spoken about it with explain why they knowingly knew both of those third party candidates were going to put Trump in office. Why does she get a pass? Because those votes probably weren't going to go to Harris anyway. Maybe they didn't vote. Who cares about Jill Stein? For me, this is a much bigger thing. The much bigger thing is Democrats need to come to Jesus and do what I've been saying for 20 years now. Start talking about working class issues. Trump has done it. He hasn't done anything to help them. In fact, what he's done so far is going to hurt working people more. But Democrats need to muscle up. You know, there was an interesting poll the other day that I read. That people asked when they think of Democrats, what do they think? And they think their issues are climate change, LGBTQ stuff, and I think that was it. That was it, basically. Whereas when you talk about Republicans, it's all about small government, lower taxes, and deregulation. It comes down to the messaging of, there's no one fighting for working people. Democrats used to be that party, used to be the party of strong unions, used to be the party of strong minimum wage. The idea that, hey, maybe what happens at the kitchen table matters. That's what they need to come back to. And I like someone like Ro Khanna, who is moving in that, who's been in that place, but moving the party in that direction. That's what we need to do. Stop with the third parties. Don't care about, there's no way a third party is going to dominate and win an election at the national level. I just don't believe it's possible. And I know that's going to get me a lot of hate mail. I just don't think, given our winner-take-all system, don't think it's possible. And if it were, you conceivably could have a winner with 34% of the vote. That means 2/3 of the country is against you. You would get nothing done then. But I want to hear your thoughts. If there's a way forward, I want to get there. If there's a way where we can bring people together, I want to be there. This is an important time. While I don't want Trump to fail, I fear he's going to.
And when that happens, we pay the costs. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program? Podcast. As always, freespeech.org. Check out our video there. And thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A civic media station.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. Via email, all direct hire staffers at the U.S. Agency for International Development were told they'll be placed on paid administrative leave starting Friday.
Sources tell ABC News that the State Department is now starting to evacuate all USAID staff who are on foreign assignments worldwide, some 1,500 to 2,000 people. The goal is to bring all those workers and their families back to the United States by this weekend.
ABC's Rachel Scott. The investigation of the deadly Washington, D.C. collision of a jetliner and an Army helicopter stands to pick up speed after the remains of all 67 people killed were recovered from the Potomac River. Investigators working up a detailed timeline of the disaster. A 77-23 vote in the Senate confirmed